very tip. What looked like a cold chisel. I mean, it was like half an inch wide, but it's something out of worthy of a weapon. I'm wondering, what kind of actual work surface does this 250-watt soldering gun have?
It looked normal. It looked like the normal 140-watt soldering gun. And how to say, it has two settings, 200 and 260. I want to fix my antenna, and I don't need it anymore.
I'm just wondering if you can deliver that kind of heat to that small a contact surface, thinking back to the one from my youth that had a much, much larger contact surface.
Well, you know, mostly wire and metal, I think. And if it is really, how to say, hot, powerful, you know, puts out a lot of heat, then I can do it more quickly. I can melt the solder onto the joint, and then I can just leave it like that.
Be careful with melting the solder onto the joint. It's taken literally. That's a good way to get a cold solder joint. But, well, obviously there's a time and a place for it. I'm just saying, so the work is hot enough where you end up with a cold solder joint.
QSL. Well, I have some experience with soldering. We did soldering in the shop class. The shop class was 7th grade. I did a lot of soldering with components, mostly solid state. My first transmitter was a 2-tube, 80 and 40 meter transmitter. I had to solder all those joints. You know, and also, my father and I used to build Dynaco stereo components, and they work.
I'm saying that's just a different power level than what you're talking about now, that's all.
I don't know, but I think that the other soldering gun that I had, there was no power coming from it at all, and I was really frustrated. And also, you know, this particular thing that I have to do up there, you know, how to say, I think I want to do it quickly, get it done. I don't want to have to sit there waiting for the joint to heat up.
I don't think you have a choice there. They have to wait for it to heat up, no matter how much power you have, and it's that big.
Well, what it is a, I think it's a 14-gauge solid wire that has to be attached to a lug. The lug is metal, and I want to solder the wire to the lug.
All right, try it. I'd love to know how it works out.
QSL, thank you very much for your interest and consideration. But now I have to stop talking because my neighbor upstairs wants to go to sleep. So I say 73 and have a great night. KG2RY.
Okay, 73, David. Thank you for participating. Have a good night, and hopefully we'll talk to you again down the line. I'm looking at 260-watt soldering guns. They don't have the chisel, but I know what you're talking about, Ed. The so-called pens are, you know, kind of real meaty, have a lot of thermal mass to them, and these things are teeny tiny little bits, so there's not a lot of surface area that you could make the thermal transfer for. So even though it does have a 260-watt capability, it's going to take a while for that heat to travel out of the head onto the surface of where he's going to solder.
You know, Roy, I remember that soldering iron from my youth, and I would say that it was so big and so heavy that if it didn't run the soldering iron, cut the cord off, and you'd be hand-to-hand combat weapons.
Well, yeah, I mean, it kind of looks like an oversized chisel that you could attack a giant with.
Exactly.
Yeah, I've seen pictures. I've never owned one. I've never used one of those. My first soldering iron, I had to trick my parents into all kinds of interesting things. The scam that I used was they didn't mind spending green stamps on things. They didn't particularly like spending dollars. But green stamps they were sort of okay with. So I got myself a wood-burning carving set, which is basically a soldering iron. So that was my first soldering iron.
Somewhere in the basement, I have an old wood-burning set that my father, long before I was born, and I think it's still in the basement, and I always use it as a solder. I never did wood-burning with it.
Yeah, I tested it out. It had multiple heads. Some of them were blades, but they had a regular soldering head for it, thankfully. So, after a little while, I kind of got tired of burning wood. There's only so much you can do with burning wood. And then I bought myself a roll of solder, and I was off to the races. But, I had to play games like that. I remember how I sort of tricked them into shortwave radio. It was supposedly another green stamp, but it was AM, FM, and it just happened to have shortwave. So I figured out how to get an AM receiver to receive single sideband, and again, I was off to the races.
Comment.
Yes. Yes, Jim.
For humor only, just for a grin. KD2OGB maybe could benefit from having one of your wood-burning sets sent in this direction.
I tell you, it made a decent soldering iron. It really did. I think I have this vague memory that it had kind of cork thermal insulation and such. It wasn't the most expensive thing. I'm sure it didn't come from China because back then we didn't get anything from the People's Republic. It might have come from Taiwan or someplace else, but I put a lot of work into that, and I have fond memories of it.
Folks say improvise, adapt, overcome. I think you embodied that spirit 100%. Well done.
Thank you very much. I tried. I always thought that there was a solution to most problems. You just have to think about it enough, and you'll figure it out. I've been very fortunate that way. Anyway, once again, I'm AC2GS, and this is the Limar Technical Nest. Does anyone have any closing comments, questions, answers, what have you, before we move on?
Very quick, mundane questions. I'll be appreciated.
Certainly, Ed.
Earlier you mentioned you have like a lifetime supply, ostensibly, solder. What diameter is the solder?
It's about an eighth of an inch.
Hey, I have a roll of that, too. If I had my druthers, I'd probably go down, definitely thinner. Shooting. I find it's a little bit big for most modern transistors. I ended up with some of the exact same stuff. If I had my druthers, I'd go about 115.
Yeah, I would agree. If I knew then what I know now, I would have gotten a smaller diameter. And that's probably why I have most of it. Because usually when I need solder, I have much thinner stuff sitting around someplace in one of my electrical supply drawers. So those are my go-to. It's only when I'm doing something big that I don't care or I can't find the small. But yeah, I would agree with you. Especially for what I used it for circuit boards and such, it's a little bit too much solder.
Well, I must confess, I have been able to make do in most cases. It's just that it's not ideal, so I can't make do with it.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, and, there are the ones you got to work with and the ones that you don't have to put too much of any work into. And usually, all things being equal, those are the better ones. But, if you need to, then you should learn how to do it. All you guys out there, there's a kind of like the last thing that an amateur radio operator who doesn't know how to solder. I learned to solder by myself, which probably as a kid, which is probably not the best way of doing it. But I remember even years later, and I joined some kind of explorer club that was supposed to teach me how to be a ham, but there were no hams there. It was just a couple of citizens band people. And they tried to teach me how to solder again, which I already knew. They tried to teach me schematics, which I already knew. And I never got a license out of that deal. But nevertheless, the soldering is very important for anyone interested really in electronics. You know, if you're not interested in electronics, it's, God forbid you want to be an appliance operator. I guess, maybe. You don't need it, but, you know. It's relatively inexpensive. It's relatively harmless. You know, if you're not silly, you're not going to burn yourself. So if you're out there and listening to me and never got into soldering, give it a try. It's a useful skill.
Mentioned the failed attempt at Michigan. Do you think it was that their goal really was to show off how much they knew rather than actually go up to their level? I've seen that in a lot of places.
No, I give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they just were a disorganized bunch of guys who had aspirations and that they weren't able to fulfill. They couldn't teach me how to be a ham because they weren't hams. I guess they assumed that they would have attracted at least one or two hams as a teacher, but that never clicked. So it was just the CPers. There's a difference between some CPers can know more than hams, but back in those days, there were things that CPers knew and there were things that hams knew. Certainly, how to become a ham is something you learn more from a ham than a CPer. So I just think that they didn't know. They knew what I knew. I had read the ARL handbook before I went there. I kind of knew all that stuff, so they didn't really help me personally. They couldn't extend my understanding of the subject. If there was an amateur radio operator, my guess would be I would learn better Morse code, and they tell me how novice licenses work, and all kinds of fun stuff, but it was not to be.
The Explorer, that has been a branch of the Boy Scouts with the forest green uniform shirt.
Yes, indeed. That's, I don't think I ever wore the uniform, but it was supposedly an Explorer organization.
The firm is Explorer Post. Sound familiar?
No, they didn't really push Explorers that much. It just happened to be organized by them through the Explorer organization. So it was never, I never remembered any kind of a doctrinaire thing. It was always kind of very grounded, at least in electronics, as opposed to anything else. Because the whole purpose of everyone who came there was to get a ham license, which no one got.
Sounds like the definition of dysfunctional. You also mentioned having to do with electronics. It was grounded. But was that world of their surface well-grounded?
Now, don't be funny. I think they meant well. They had an understanding of the subject approximately the same as mine. So unfortunately, that doesn't really lend itself well to learning from people who don't know anything more than you do. These guys were citizen banders. They meant well. I assume they expected to get hams involved in the program, but it never came to pass. All I remember from the experiences, I had to end up watching I Dream of Jeannie as a repeat because the meeting coincided with I Dream of Jeannie at the time.
How old were you?
I do not remember exactly. Probably something like 14, maybe 15.
You might have been better off without I Dream of Jeannie.
I don't know. She was a looker.
My point exactly.
Oh, well, what can I tell you? I'm a child of television. Probably the first crush I had on a television star was Elizabeth Montgomery on Bewitched.
Everybody else. I tried with Mary Travers of Peter Mary's Eyes. I was so enamored of her.
Ah, those younger, more innocent days.
Yeah.
Closing on education.
What about education, Jim?
I've enjoyed tonight tremendously. The story I'll tell you is my two sons, I took fishing. I taught them to fish. They fish way better than me. Exponentially, orders of magnitude. There's a 9-foot box with a facsimile fish of my son's fish. He caught in Florida next to me in my shack here. He's buying a house to put it in. They fish way better than me. And many other things. I taught them to fish. So does that make me a complete success or a complete failure?
Let me take this one, Roy. You are a father, I don't know about it.
Maybe.
And I also don't know about it, so please do, Ed. I'll probably throw in my two cents worth, but sure, go ahead, Ed.
Nothing is more of a success when your kid or kids think better than you is not a reflection on you. They had you, two of them, to allow them to catch up to you so then they could move beyond you. That is the strongest sign of success of a parent.
Thank you for that. I tend to agree, but it's nice to hear the reinforcement. It's a good thought to ponder as you as we talk about the contents of tonight's net. Very nice. I'll stand down and listen.
Boy, has my son left me in the dust, and I take full credit for it.
Very good, Ed. I agree with you completely. I think that's part of the responsibility of being a father, of guiding your children to a better life. I mean, this has kind of been a keystone of the American dream, where, you know, people struggled and saved and spent the time and the money to have their children be in better positions than they were, and their children better. I think that goes for education. A good teacher hopefully wants his students to aspire and become better, know more about the fields that they teach them than the teacher knew. So, again, a lot of these things are certainly successes, certainly not failures.
Well, I have a few, Roy.
Okay.
Jim, when your kids were teenagers, did they ever roll their eyes and say, Dad, you don't understand?
They did, and they still do. And occasionally, as a matter of fact, the topic just came up with my son, the engineer. We were talking about thrust loads on roofs cable roofs and trusses and rafters and whatnot, and I threw him some, and he's like, man, and he came back later on, and he didn't say anything to me, but he told Mom, your dad's a professional. I'm like the good Wizard of Oz, the guy without his diploma. He's got the diploma, but I've been around the block a time or two, learned a few things. And yes, most definitely the answer to your question is yes.
Hi. In direct response to that, my son is always getting my take on this. And my rule is, as an adult, my obligation is tell my children what I think once and then stop. But to get back to my point, recently my son said to me, rolled his eyes and said, Dad, you don't understand. And then he patiently explained where I was wrong.
I think we're all wrong sometimes, and what a neat moment. I invite that moment. It hasn't happened yet, but I assume it'll happen shortly.
Oh, it will.
Stuff, good stuff.
Okay, this is AC2GS, and I thank everyone who participated tonight. I hope people enjoyed it. I hope you learned a few things. And I hope you come back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do it all over again. But now is time for the SpaceNet report with WS2N, Paul. So, Paul, take it away.
Okay, good. And great net tonight, boy. AC2GS, WS2N. And I have two rolls of SATA left, lifetime supplies, like you, Roy. But you can still get new ones. I know Radio Shack is gone. I used to get mine from Radio Shack. But now, believe it or not, Harbor Freight actually sells rolls of SATA for electrical work, as well as the soldering irons, too. They got a bunch of them that you can choose from. And, of course, I think I'm afraid it's like one of the most inexpensive stores you can go to for anything like that. But, okay. I want to start off just talking about Russia with the Progress cargo vehicle that just went up last Wednesday to the International Space Station. They brought up around 6,000 pounds of stuff, and included in that weight is like a couple hundred pounds of fuel. They actually transferred the fuel from the Progress ship that's done autonomously to their Russian module, which has the thrusters on board. So anytime they need to accelerate the space station out of the way, those thrusters come on, you know, in case there's debris or something coming by. And that just happened, actually, and there was another Progress attached to it, and they did do exactly that, piece of debris from the satellite the Russians blew up not too long ago. It came flying by, and, you know, we track all that stuff, and they know when it's time to move. If it's going to come in within like a mile and a half of the space station, they always move the space station. Anyway, that thing docked successfully with the ISS. And it's weird because, you know, with all the problems going on with Russia and Ukraine, Roscosmos, it's almost like a different country. You know, they just, you know, go along dealing with the European Space Agency and NASA. Like there's no problems. It's very strange. Any comments? Okay. On the International Space Station, they have a detector, you know, EMIT, E-M-I-T detector. The idea is that, you know, it looks down at Earth all the time as the space station goes around every 90 minutes. It's looking at a path maybe 70 miles wide on the ground as the space station travels. And EMIT is looking for dust. The idea was to detect the dust in the atmosphere and see how that would affect global warming. But they also realized, you know, it's got an infrared sensor, a camera which is hooked up to a spectrometer. They're also able to detect quite clearly methane that emanates from the Earth's surface. There's different locations around the Earth that are venting right out of the ground or out of the water methane, and, you know, tons of it. You're looking at sometimes like 60,000 tons per hour. They say, you know, it's a huge amount of methane that comes out of the Earth. You know, and the small amount of methane that we lose in our stoves when a pilot light goes out or something is nothing. But yet there's a movement to stop using gas stoves, you know, in populated areas in this country. But here, I mean, they show. It was on the NASA website where they showed the different locations around the world with the tremendous amount of methane coming out. And the problem with methane is, it's a global warming. It's up into the atmosphere and it's actually, as far as I'm concerned, worse than carbon dioxide. because it's, they said, 80 times worse, more devastating, you know, per pound, you know, for carbon dioxide. So they're looking at the problems with the difference between the two, though. Methane will only stay around for like 10 years or so. Yeah, sunlight and everything just absorbs it. I guess it separates the molecules. It becomes inert after a while in the atmosphere, where carbon dioxide doesn't. CO2 sticks around, they say, you know, for like a century or more. But, you know, they're going to look into eventually trying to cap these stuff off. Some locations are coming out of the ocean. They can't stop that. But the ones that are on the ground in some of these foreign countries, they'd have to have, you know, some kind of trees or to get in there and get that done. They know all this stuff because of the Emmett unit that's now attached to the space station, on the outside of the space station. It was brought up on our SpaceX Falcon 9 a couple months ago. And then the Canadarm 2 pulled it out of the trunk of the cargo vehicle and attached it to the space station on the outside. So that's the story with Emmett. Any questions? Okay, there was an Ares contact with the space station a couple days ago, actually. It wasn't a phone bridge contact. It was a direct contact. And the location, the school that they used was Fort Myers, Florida, which, of course, got hit by Hurricane Ian. So it's good that they were able to do this. Astronaut Josh Cassidy, he was the one that made contact with it. You know, his call is KI5CRH. Of course, they don't use that when they're on the space station. They just use the space station call letter. They made direct contact for about 12 minutes as it flew overhead. And, you know, the article, this was in the ARRL news. You know, they send out the weekly letter. I think that's where I read this. And the location was very important because of the hurricane that hit that place. They said it really brought the spirits up of the school and people, naturally the kids involved. So that was okay. Any comments? Anyway, it's the Canterbury School in Fort Myers. I thought I'd mention that. There's always an article dealing with space for some reason from the ARRL. They always have something. What's going on? There's another fight going. There's a couple of fights going up in November. One of them is this inflatable heat shield that I've been talking about. NASA has the, they call it LOFTED, you know, it's a big long thing I wrote down here, Low Earth Orbit Light Test of an Inflatable Decelerator. Essentially, it's a big, gigantic heat shield. It's going to inflate, starts off maybe four feet diameter, about 7 feet long, but after it inflates with nitrogen tanks, it blows up to over 20 feet in diameter, which is bigger than any heat shield that we have or ever have used for spacecraft. You know, ones that we use on Apollo and on Dragon, and, you know, there's different sizes. But the biggest one is 16 feet, and that's going to be on Artemis. This thing is up to 20 feet, and of course, if it works, it could eventually make it larger. But they'll be sending it up next month with another spacecraft. It's a dual flight. The rocket they're going to use in Atlas V passing and launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base. And the main payload that they really want to put up there is the Joint Polar Satellite System. So that's the main one. That's a deal between NOAA and NASA, the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. And NASA is paying for the Joint Polar Satellite System. So after the Atlas V puts this thing into orbit, the JPSS-2 will separate, and that leaves the inflatable decelerator below it. When that first satellite is clear, this thing will electronically come on, and it'll start going through a process. It'll inflate the rings, these tubes. Each one is bigger than the next, so it creates a cone. Looks like seven of these tubes. They look like massive inner tubes. But of course, it's made out of special material. And on the outside of these tubes, it looks flush because they have insulation, then they have this material that's woven and pulled over it, and that material is heat resistant, and the thing will survive, 4,000 degrees as it comes through the atmosphere. So, if they could work this out, eventually you could bring in big payloads, let's say, not only to Mars, which is the main reason for this, but also from Earth. They needed to bring something big back from, the space station or future space station. You want to bring something large mass, large volume back, you would be able to use one of these things to send it right through the atmosphere, 17,000 miles an hour. They have tested something similar to this before. They sent one test up in a sounding rocket, just straight up and then straight back down, and gave it a test with that, and they also sent it up on another rocket where they got up to like 5,000 or 6,000 miles per hour, and that worked out okay as well. But this one is going to be the first one that they're going to test at actual speed, which is 17,500 miles per hour. They'll see how that works. And they will loft it, and it's got it's a big heavy tank behind it. That's got the two nitrogen tanks they're going to use to inflate this thing. And then the idea is, if it all works out, they'll be able to bring heavy loads to different planets and Earth. Eventually, new Vulcan rocket, which is being built, Vulcan rocket will replace the Atlas V, which has been the workhorse of NASA for decades now. Vulcan rocket has a big plan of being used on a regular basis, and they will retire the Atlas V rocket. Vulcan is different than the Atlas V. Atlas V uses regular kerosene fuel and liquid oxygen. Vulcan uses liquid methane and liquid oxygen. By the way, that's never been flown before into orbit on any rocket. SpaceX is trying to do that with the big Starship that they're building. China is trying to do it with a couple of their rockets. Jeff Bezos with Amazon, he owns Blue Origin. He would like to have a liquid methane rocket built called the New Glenn. He's working on that in Florida. That was supposed to go up this year, but that looks like it might go up toward the end of next year. In the meantime, the Vulcan boost would be the main rocket for NASA. They'll pay other companies to launch things, but Vulcan will essentially replace the Atlas V rocket. Now, the cost of building these rockets, the most expensive part, of 60 or 70% of the value of a Vulcan rocket, is the engine compartment at the bottom. So they plan on just having the top part expendable, you know, the first stage, as well as the second stage, of course. But the first stage, they plan on eventually separating the engine. They're going to be using, they call them BE4, liquid methane, liquid oxygen engine. There's going to be two of them on the bottom of the Vulcan, producing this 1.1 million pounds of thrust. And they would like to be able to reuse those engines. So someday they plan on taking one of these Lopids, these inflatable heat shields, to be able to bring that kind of mass back to Earth and reuse those engines. So that's the plan for the ULA, United Launch Alliance, with the Vulcan rocket for the future. Any comments? WS2N. Okay, nothing heard. Just a couple more topics here. The NASA InSight lander, which is kind of like on its way out, you know, landed in, 2018 or so. It's been detecting Mars quakes, any kind of little, let's call them, movements that it landed. It had two main instruments on board. It had one was a seismometer, which could detect any kind of movements, and then it had this heat probe thing, which really didn't work out. But the seismometer works great. You know, it could detect any small impact or any kind of a quake on Mars. Sure enough, there was a meteor that hit the planet about a couple of weeks ago. And it was relatively large. It would have probably burnt up in the Earth atmosphere, but here they predict it was around 40 feet in diameter, which would, of course, have it if it ever hit over a city or something on Earth. But, on Mars, it came flying right through the atmosphere. The atmosphere on Mars is only like 0.1% of the atmosphere that we have here. If you fly at 100,000 feet, way above the airplane that we fly on, twice that height, over twice that height, that would be the air pressure that you have on the surface of Mars. So this meteor, or any meteors that hit Mars, come flying right through. This one made a pretty big hole, about 500 feet in diameter, on Mars. It was detected by the seismometer on InSight, on the InSight lander, and they thought it was a Mars quake early on, but they figured out eventually it was this meteor that hit the planet. So there's so much equipment on Mars, things riding around on Mars, and a lot of spacecraft in orbit. One of the spacecraft that's been in orbit for over 20 years is the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, and it has a lot of instruments on board. One of them is the, they call it the high-rise camera. So it's like 7-inch or 8-inch diameter camera looking down at the planet. And sure enough, they were able to get a picture of the crater that this thing made. And they know it's new because they have old pictures, and it wasn't there before. So I thought that was pretty cool. Now, InSight is covered with dust now. They don't have a global dust storm like they had a few years ago, back in 2014, when they lost the Opportunity rover. Opportunity was solar panel. But it is a local area where InSight has landed. InSight has these massive, they're about, 15-foot diameter panels that they have two of them sticking out of InSight, maybe a little shorter than that. But anyway, they're now covered with dust. It has camera on board. It sends pictures back, and you look at the pictures, and You can barely see the solar panels, but it's still receiving enough sun to keep going. But NASA believes it's getting so bad that they probably will lose it, you know, very shortly, maybe within a month or so. They'll keep going as long as possible. But it was good that it was sitting in that location when this meteor hit the planet. They're able to get that information and data back. So, any comments? This is WS2M. Another flight waiting for this November. This Thursday. I'll have to check. Is Falcon 9 Heavy. Falcon 9. Normal Falcon 9 is, you know, a two-stage rocket. On the first stage, they have these nine Merlin D engines. Yeah. Falcon 9 can be flown by itself, or it can be flown as a Falcon Heavy. I've done this a couple of times before, and I think three times before, and they launch it from Launch Complex 39A, which is the, you know, most common one that they use in Florida. They also use Launch Complex 40. This one's 39A. This is the same one that they launch people from, you know, and it's the same launch complex they use for shuttle and they use for some of the Apollo flights. So this Thursday they should be launching a Space Force military mission from that complex. Puts out a little over 5 million pounds of thrust. Right now it is the most powerful rocket on Earth that's operational. Not to be outdone, NASA's space launch system, also expected to go up this November, is maybe twice as powerful as that. But right now, operational-wise, SpaceX Heavy, which is basically three Falcon 9s both together, will launch from. And I'm sure this will make the news. I'm sure it'll make it on many websites. Doing is what they've done before. The port and starboard boosters will eventually separate in about 2 minutes of flight, and they will do a 180 as they're flying, and as they fly horizontal, and they'll do a 180, and they call that a boost back flight. They launch three of the nine engines on each one, and they start heading back to Cape Canaveral. And then when they get close, it turns vertically, tail down, and it will again launch, ignite three of the engines to slow itself going down through the atmosphere, protect the vehicle during that critical period. And then from there on in, they'll be heading straight down. Normally, they head back down to these drones. Here, they have Launch Complex 13 is something that SpaceX took over, and they call it Landing Zone 1 and Landing Zone 2. But it used to be a Launch Complex 13. And essentially, it's two massive concrete circles, that big concrete landing pads that these two things will land. And if it's anything like the previous flights, they come down exactly at the same time. It looks like it's animation. Come straight down, and when it gets close to the ground, the four legs open up on each one. The center rocket, they only need the one rocket at the very end, not the three. Center rocket ignites, and it will come down and land. And it makes a beautiful picture when you watch that. The core stage, the center Falcon 9, there were plans years ago, and they tried it once or twice, but it didn't work out, to land on a drone ship out at sea. But he has given that idea up pretty much. So that will be expendable. It'll just go into the Atlantic Ocean and don't think apply to the center core stage with the nine Merlin D engines. But, you know, he gets so much money for doing this, especially from, you know, government money, in this case, the Space Force launch, that he makes he'll make plenty of money. Not that he needs it. I think he's like the richest guy in the world, if you want, but that's the story with the Falcon Heavy, probably this Thursday. Any comments or questions? I've gotten me to the end of my list. Any comments?
Yeah, they should send you up at Blue Origin on a one-way trip.
Okay. Blue Origin. Yeah. Well, I don't know if they're ever going to get around to launching it. Like I said, maybe the end of next year. Any comments? I missed a call, by the way. This is Paul, WS2M. Nothing heard. Okay, Roy, over to you. Yeah. On tomorrow night, ClubNet, Club InfoNet. AC2GSWS2N, back.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul. This is AC2GS, GGS rather. Thanks for the SpaceNet report. Thanks for all that you do for the TechNet. Thanks for all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it. Want to remind people that if you want to contact me, my email address is mailbag@ac2gs.com. The link page is available 24/7 and some very interesting articles on YouTube, so take a look. You get there by typing roy.ac2gs.com, and the audio stream will be on for the most part. Yeah, I'm doing a little maintenance this week, so it might be off for a while at times. But you get there by typing in technet.ac2gs.com, and of course, MikeKC2NJR's great archive site, amateurradio.tv, where he has archives of the Limar Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. Keep that all in mind. I hope you you enjoyed yourself tonight. I hope you learned a few things. I had a good time. I hope you did too. I hope you'll join us again next Sunday when we try and do this all over again, 8 p.m. And as Dick, K2RAW, would end his technical net, be kind to each other. It's good advice in general. It's great advice these days. We live in dangerous times, so please take care of yourself. Take care of your loved ones. Hell, take care of your hated ones. Take care of each other. And just as always, want to remind people of that old quote that I've been pushing. It's impossible for a man to learn what he thinks he already knows. Keep that in mind. Be open to ideas.
That's time. Complete.
And learn. And grow. Anyway, once again, this is AC2GS. Had a great time. Hope you did too. Have a great week, be well, and we'll talk again, hopefully, next Sunday night at 8 p.m. This is AC2GS, formally closing the Halloween edition of the Limar Technical Net, and I am clear.
Side. KC1SAM, NY2H.
Don't you ever sleep?
of like New York City.
Yeah, okay, the city that... Hey, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about those Wi-Fi pods from Compia. Compia? Yeah, Compia. Did you get them? What do you think about them? I just got an offer to buy one, and I'm thinking about it. But I wondered if you got it, hooked it up.
I'm sorry, are you talking about the coffee?
Maybe I'll catch it tomorrow. No, the pod, the Wi-Fi that meshes with the router. Remember that? The pod, little hexagonal thing plugs in. I can ask you tomorrow about it. I'm just about to go to bed. I said, let me just see for the hell of it. I think you were getting one, and I could use one, but I'm curious if you bought it and if you have an opinion as to how it works.
Yeah. Excuse me. Hold on a second. Still a little bit, we've got this virus trailing a little bit. Yes, I got the mesh router. Yeah, it works very well.
Okay, I guess what I thought it would be good, I read all about it. I have a couple of cameras I need because they're out of ways, and I always have a good connection to them, so I think that would work for me. All right. Yeah, I know you have the virus. I can still hear it. I was going to ask you how you were doing, but I can hear it, so I should shut up and let you get some rest.
Yeah, it's Tuesday will be 2 weeks, so I don't know. I guess if it goes beyond that, I'll see my doctor again.
Yeah, that's a definite. That's a long time. You know, there's a couple of them going around, and nothing says you can't get one, then get the other one. So who knows? Maybe you were lucky and hit the jackpot there. So yeah, I would definitely, you know, look into it, see them, and you know, let them evaluate. So, but I can hear in your voice, you know, I didn't catch it right away, but I do hope you feel better.
Yeah, it's hanging on. I don't know. I'm almost starting to get concerned. But I don't know. It's weird. But yeah, sometime this week, if I should be cleared by now. But I'll check in.
W.
You know, I ran my meds. I'm finished with my meds, and. It's just still like a little head cold, you know. So, anyway, yeah, I it's the three bands router. So one of the bands they use just to communicate between them, and it works good for streaming and everything else. So, I don't know if I gave you the model. I'll have to look at it again, but I can email that to you. And I had recommended it to my son's father-in-law also before I got my pair. And same thing there. He had great results. They use these Fire Sticks on the TVs, and apparently the Fire Sticks aren't that sensitive, and they were having difficulty streaming. But he put these routers in it that fix that problem. So I would recommend them.
Okay. Yeah, I had tried some other ones once. I guess the first generation, and they screwed everything up. Came in a package of four or five, and I just took them back. This looks like it's much, much better. So, yeah, I like to set up cameras out ways, and they're always dropping out, you know. You know, security cameras here, wireless. So that's a long story, too. But anyway, yeah, I figured I'd just ask your opinion of them. So I like it. Sounds good. Nothing like first-hand, results. And yeah, I'd be a little concerned. 2 weeks. Like I said, it may very well you get over one, but you got the other one. You know what I'm saying? For a single virus to last 2 weeks like that, And you've been tested for COVID, so who knows? Anyway, I would definitely follow through on that when you get the opportunity to get them involved. So I guess the rest. Like, you're here in the morning and you're here at night. Worse than me.
Yeah, I know the kids ran a couple of weeks also in what they had. So maybe I have what they had. But yeah, I may go this week because I also want to get my flu shot and the bivalent COVID shot. But I'm waiting for this thing to clear, so I visit my doctor this week, you know, see if I can get the shots also. But we'll see. I'm just thinking that it might be what the kids had, because it took them a long time to clear it. And the pediatrician kind of said, well, yeah, that's what's going around now, so I don't know. But we'll let you know. KC1SAM, NY2H.
Yeah, that's right. I remember the kids had it. Well, you know, they know what's going around, and there's, who knows, maybe there's some other one around, and you got that one, and you hit the jackpot, you know. Kids like to share, especially stuff like that. So, all right. Yeah, I got both of those shots. I got the flu and the latest COVID one at the same time. And it was nothing, you know, they were very easy going. Didn't even know I got them. So, you know, one each arm. I figured out this was really company, but that was fine. So, all right, take care, Lou. And wait. Bless you. I'll be clear. Once you get some rest, man, I'll see what you're doing tomorrow.
All right, Sam, very good. Have a good evening. Yeah, we'll probably catch you tomorrow. Take care. KC1SAM, NY2H. W2VL repeater. That's tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater. Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5 o'clock a.m.
Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Limark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.